Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sequoia, who is here to speak with us about the completion of our first successful practice offering supporting the Bridgewalk campaign this year. Welcome, Sequoia.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, that's fun in itself, huh? The very first.
The very first. And it was a great deal of fun.
It was a recipe for Thanksgiving. Tell us about it.
Yes. Well, first of all, you know, I think I just love that it was a fundraiser for the folks in Cantalomba. It was just, yeah. I mean, that from the get-go made it fun.
Yeah.
And
that's
also,
so true.
You know, really, mm-hmm. because from the get-go, it just wasn't about any of us. You know, it was just about love. And I also love that it was about food, and food is what brought us mm-hmm. to Cantalomba. And
yes, I was thinking about that too, Sequoia. It's funny, I did not make that connection for the longest time. Yeah, do go on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I don't know, something about that, just I felt our connection the whole time, you know, just something that so basic that we share in common, and it just seems perfect.
Exactly. I will tell you at the end of the. I mean, it was really a fabulous workshop. I enjoyed it so much, and the very last thing as we were ending, what dropped in too late to say it was just. As we were parting, and, you know, everyone was obviously lit up, just that sense of, and everything we did today to come together is nourishing our team all the way across the world.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I think one of the last things we were talking about is just that wholehearted participation and how that includes all of life. And just, you know, when we were talking about cooking and just going cooking with wholehearted participation and how that includes everybody and, you know, including our friends halfway around the world. And in some way, who can understand, they're there cooking with us.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the themes that was so inspiring that really kind of facilitated that awareness for me was how much people spoke during the workshop and how much the workshop was tailored for us to see that the process is nourishment and mm-hmm. that we could be eating without nourishment and we can be nourished by anything far beyond food.
Just really looking at it's not what but how. You know,
exactly.
And we took the theme of Thanksgiving, gratitude, you know, a recipe for gratitude. And, you know, mm-hmm. it was, why wait until the celebration, you know?
Yeah.
Things that we hope to gain from the celebration, let's just have it now. And in the workshop, that was that now happened to be cooking. And so practicing whatever that was that we hope to have in our celebratory experience, having it right now in the kitchen as we cook.
And I love that in the same way our practice always is, that in the sense that we're not a theoretical practice, right? It's not about reading a bunch of stuff, but having a direct experience, and that's what we were walked through, is looking to see, okay, what's the process I want to practice? And then we got to actually go and do it. And cook with that from that process place to practice being in that process as we cooked.
Yes, and I think one of the things that made it so much fun is that we got to do it in community. It was virtual, but yet everyone was right there with us, and I found that so inspiring, and I think other people did too. It just mm-hmm. felt. Somehow that, I mean, with what people were talking about and had to contribute, it just felt like we were actually cooking together and being inspired by each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. And as you said that, what dropped in is, you know, I think this point was actually made in the workshop, that even that is a process that we can carry with us all the time, that sense of being with, of being in community. Even if technically, you know, it's quote, just me doing something, but that we're never alone. We're always in that larger sense, we're always in community.
Yes. Boy, we can feel really alone when we're in the kitchen with a conditioned mind.
Absolutely. Oh, so true. That's what it's gunning for. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then to have that experience of, you know, seemingly being in the kitchen by yourself, but not being alone, because we were practicing with now, you know, just being here with what was in front of us and turning our attention to what it is that we really, what was that most important ingredient that we really wanted to bring right there to that moment.
And so that occurs to me as I listen to Sequoia that, you know, not, you know, a lot of people weren't able to be in that workshop, and yet, you know, a lot of people on this call probably, and people who will be listening later, are headed into a time where there will be a lot of holiday kinds of shopping, menus, cooking, planning. Any kind of practical tips you have from having created the workshop, from your own experience, you know, being in the monastery kitchen a lot, from what you heard in the workshop, in terms of how folks might support themselves in having the, you know, practicing what they want to have during that holiday season cooking time?
Yeah. Well, stay really close to practice and to be involved in everything that you can. And I think it just really, really helps to really set the intention. I mean, we can get caught up with the recipe and the outcome, and it's really easy to slide off into that. But to really set the intention before we begin, what is it that I actually, what is really important here? What is it that I actually, what is it I actually want to be nourished by in this moment? And, you know, and then it's a practice. It's a complete practice. And anything, any reminders that can be there to remind us what's the most important ingredient.
It's so simple and so straightforward, but I think we do miss it a lot, don't we? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, holidays are such a perfect example. Why are we doing this, right? We're probably not coming together to have big family fights and to eat too much sugar and be hungover, right? No one would say that's what we're going for. And yet, how often does that either end up being the dread of what people are told is going to happen or, you know, the story of what I'm in the middle of? So that's such a simple but beautiful thing to do. That's where recording and listening shines, right? Is, okay, so I'm headed into a holiday celebration, whatever my role is in that, whether I'm the person, you know, who's going to be doing a lot of cooking or whatever it is, to make a recording to remind myself of, you know, what do I actually want today? What am I practicing? And to the best of our ability to practice that instead of practicing the outcome of whatever it is.
Exactly. I just loved one of the participants shared a very inspiring story about just really being present with the food as it was being cooked, and just feeling the salt and smelling the spinach and just being there, and then having the whole thing fall to the floor, and there it was gone.
Gone,
but because that person was just practicing now and not next, just to be able to move with each thing as it unfolded rather than, and then standing there in a big pile of
glass and ruined lunch.
I wanted to. And I think that was one of the biggest takeaways is just, set the intention and then allow everything to unfold and be present to what is, and who knows? Who knows where it's headed?
Yeah, I mean, truly. I mean, because that to me, I remember that distinctly. That was a religious moment for me, right? Because
yeah.
life could not have set that up any more perfectly.
No.
Right? I mean, it's just so, because when everything goes perfectly, oh, the souffle turned out exactly the way I wanted it. I mean, that's great. But it doesn't really give us the same opportunity to practice the unconditional process that we really want to practice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the end, who wants to share in the food that's created that comes from a place of, mm-hmm. you know, having to have it turn out perfectly and being
right.
stressed? You know, we'd rather sit down and eat a peanut butter sandwich at the end, you know,
truly.
With someone that's just completely present and enjoyed the whole process. And, you know, and so,
So true. Wow. So, Koya, we're coming to the end of our time. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
Just that, you know, just thank you to everyone that participated and, and what a joy it was to, I mean, I just felt like, wow, you know, folks are just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was just great to have an opportunity to come together. And I just encourage people, these workshops to support Cantalomba are just, I mean, I don't have words to express. They're really, they're another level beyond workshops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A workshop within a workshop within a workshop.
Exactly. So, you know, I think there's a couple more coming up. We have the...
The next one. Actually, tomorrow. What's today? Tuesday. Yeah, tomorrow we have the group coaching starting.
Yeah.
I think that registration is probably closed. But then... a week from Saturday, so November 30th, we have the Compassionate Scheduling Workshop happening. So excited for that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then we have a Guidance Day with Sherry coming up in December. So, yeah. And
so
lots more to come.
Yeah, don't miss these.
Yeah,
There's just some kind of magic.
Well, Sequoia, thank you for being the first facilitator to step up. That's really, it's very fun. Yeah.
Completely my joy. It was wonderful. Mm. Thanks, Jen.
All right. Thank you, Sequoia. Thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you on Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Sequoia. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael. I think people will all understand that Sherry is busily typing hundreds of responses to email classes.
Yes.
The computer.
Yes. Willingly, sounds like.
Willingly. Yes, willingly. And it's been such a treasure, hasn't it, to read all the responses if we're keeping up with the class? Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's great. It's great. And I enjoyed that conversation with Sequoia and Jen, and I noticed a little taste of that heartwarming holiday feeling and the goodness that came from that workshop.
Oh, yes. Having participated in it, I can say that it was just a very, very, it was truly one of those, I think Sequoia pointed to this, one of those experiences of doing practice in a Sangha environment and benefiting from that. I mean, I think the ingredient that we were looking at, what is the most important ingredient that goes into a recipe for Thanksgiving or a life of Thanksgiving, and presence is really the one that we are all pointing to in so many ways. And I think that was why there was such a level of well-being after that workshop, because everybody was so present for the time that we were together and we were doing an activity in presence. And so even though we were all in our separate little kitchens cooking our separate little meals, there was such a sense of connection.
Yes. Beautiful.
It was fantastic. It was really fun.
Yeah, great. And I have announcements here.
Great.
As Jen was talking about, we have an upcoming Compassionate Scheduling Workshop next Saturday, November 30th. This is the latest Bridge Walk practice opportunity to benefit Living Compassion Africa. Join us for this exploration of how we're bamboozled into living life on ego's schedule and how to support the human being in dancing to life's rhythms. Proceeds go to the 2019 Bridgewalk campaign. And to learn more about the campaign, visit livingcompassion.org/BW2019.
Well, I'm looking forward to that one.
Yes, I'm sure you are. Yes. And celebrate 2019 and welcome 2020 with a community of folks dedicated to practicing conscious, compassionate awareness at our New Year's retreat, December 27th through January 1st in the San Francisco Bay Area. This retreat features group discussions, guidance with Sherry, delicious food, and free time to spend in nature on the beautiful, spacious grounds. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
And Michael, if I may, I don't know if this made it to the schedule yet, but Sherry is at East West in Seattle on December 8th. So folks that are in the neighborhood in and around there to come and listen to her talk about Don't Suffer, Communicate.
Don't Suffer, Communicate at East West in Seattle on December 8th.
Yes. Yes, sir. I think it's exciting. At 5:30 to 7:30.
Okay. Great. And a few reminders. If you'd like to get in the queue today to talk with Ashwini, press *6 and then 1 to make a show and a conversation on one topic of about 5 minutes. It's great. Okay, I think we are ready here.
Okay.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Ren from South Florida. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, hi, Ren.
Yes, hi, Ren.
Oh, good. So excited. So I wanted to, now everything's coming at the same time. I wanted to share my plans for the Africa fundraising project, which I've gotten so much resistance for in the past. And this year, because of the idea was put out there, 100% participation, I was like, okay, maybe I can do it. And now it's all come together. I'm going to be at a park. I'm going to have kids of all ages. We're going to do process art. And that means you don't worry about what it looks like. It's the way you do it. And then it just hit me like, oh, that's just like how you do anything is how you do everything. Like, that just goes with what we're talking about. So,
What an absolutely gorgeous idea.
Yeah, and it wasn't me. It just came through. And then, because I started with the art, and then the art teacher does these easels, and I'm like, but it's not going to look like anything. And then it just came through like, oh, wait, it doesn't have to look like anything. Don't have a model, because then whatever you get, and it's just the joyful experience of doing it.
Yes. Well, and it's such a beautiful illustration of your process, right, Ren? Because
yeah.
I think here it is. There's an invitation to participate in your practice to support a project that you care about. right? And the resistance is really there to keep us from the participation, because I project from what you just said about this particular art process that you might be getting some of the same messages. It has to look some way. There has to be a certain outcome. It's not just about fully and joyfully participating and having a good time. It can't be that, right? That's the resistance we experience. And when the heart jumps at, okay, 100% participation, come on, let's see how we can do that, then the guidance comes in from life to say, you could do this with your kids in a park. And it doesn't have to look like anything. People can just get together and have a great time with doing art.
Yeah.
And it feels so right?
It just does, and I can't believe how it just all came together. So I got these little washable primary colors, and then you just put them on a paper plate any which way, and you take the two paper plates and you twist it, and then you see what happens, and you can create different colors, experiment, you know, add glitter and all that. But what really struck me was, so I was explaining this to a friend of mine, and she's like, well, I don't know how you're really going to get the revenue. And I was like, well, I don't really care about that. That's not really important, because this is about participation. And she just didn't get it, which was okay, but I just was so thankful for Sangha and this whole language and ideas, way of thinking, way of being aware, that I'm now coming up on 3 years of being with the Sangha. And I just couldn't explain it, because it's that direct experience of the participation where it really doesn't sound like, it's a fundraiser, but you're not concerned about raising the funds? Not really, no. I'm more concerned about the participation. But we know that, because we know the language, and just so thankful for all of you.
Oh, that moves me so much, Ren, because that's exactly it, right? Because, first of all, several things. First of all, here you are in a very joyful place after having transcended the resistance and following life's guidance on putting this event together. It's going to be all about a good time from participating. And then you have that objection, right, where somebody says, well, how are you going to raise the money? And that is supposed to tank that energy, to tank all that good feeling around what we just accomplished. It's just supposed to take it away. But instead, you stayed with that place from which that idea came, which is, you know what, it's all about participation. I'm not going to lose my why over some objection around some practical notion around raising money, because I project it for you. It's about participation. The whole campaign is about participation. That's the case in all of Sangha, right? At the highest level, we are alive, and that is our participation in existence, to know that.
And it's just so beautiful, right? Just how good
so
it feels
beautiful
to participate is that's what I'm learning in my deepening my practice, just again and
because
again
it's
every
showing
day.
Up, showing up and being here for existence is the most joyful thing ever. And here's the piece about it, which I would project, is also your experience. So you did not know how you were going to participate, and all you felt was resistance. You practiced with it, and life gave you the project, right? This is how you're going to do this. And wherever that insight came from will give you the information of how you're going to fundraise for fundraising. It's not up to you. It will be revealed to you when the time is right.
Exactly. Just like I found the perfect park because I took a wrong turn, and life revealed, hey, let me get out and look here, and it's going to be at a park. And I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much.
Yeah, and we don't have to go to worry, right? It's not something you have to think about or figure out or worry about or not do what arose for you to do, because these sort of practical details are not all taken care of, right?
Right. It's like when the mentor comes in and says, you can't do this wrong. There's no way to do this wrong. It's like, oh, okay.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Go on and enjoy it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well,
thank you so much.
I just wanted to share.
Good luck, Ren, and keep us posted maybe on the next support call how it went.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Ren. Ashwini, I enjoyed that conversation and the focus on participation and the joy of that. And I also heard the skill that comes when I'm interacting with other people and they're not enthusiastic in the way that I am about a particular endeavor and not taking that on or taking that personally or letting it affect my energy or what I'm focused
on. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And let that be their experience, and that we could stay with my experience, which is excitement.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I also like what Ren said, that there's that awareness that this is my experience, but it may not be someone else's, right? Mm-hmm. And often that is the case when we start to practice, that we realize that our orientation to life is so different. It's very hard for someone who's not part of our practice to really resonate in some ways with our vocabulary and our orientation. And that's all right. I know what that means.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's almost like a secret language.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The handshake.
Yeah.
We're awareness practitioners.
Yes, yes. And that we joyfully share with anyone who wants to participate.
That's right. Yes, exactly so.
And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. This is Kate in Australia.
Hey, Kate.
Hey, Kate.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Loud and clear, like you were next door.
Great. I am calling in. I have been having a mini workshop myself over here in kind of like the confluence of the year-long on work and the Enneagram class and communication and stress. And I am in a PhD program and working on one of my major milestones for that. And I have been really, really struggling with being able to move forward on it despite working towards it for the last year and just kind of paralyzed by voices of, you don't know what you're doing, you're not good enough. And then seeing all of this stuff come up with the Enneagram, and then rather than, I mean, not, there's definitely been this like good, oh, that's so good to see, but there's also been a lot of self-judgment. Like in the Enneagram, one of the things it said was you do, as a type 7, like you can't finish things very, you can hear it in my voice. Ego has been using a lot of the messaging to turn it into like fodder to fuel this being paralyzed. So that little barking you heard was I got a new puppy last week. And I love her. And she's also a lot of work. And then I'm in the Enneagram class and it's like, oh, there you go. You're struggling to complete this very big milestone and just kind of paralyzed in self-doubt and not good enough, and then you went and started a new big adventure, like you got a brand new puppy. But that's like this dog has been in the works for many, many months, and it both resonates with what the Enneagram says and also with the messages that self-hate wants to turn everything I'm learning and all of the things I'm practicing into more ways for me to feel bad about all the stuff I'm struggling with. And it's, again, I think it's just this, in a good way, the confluence of, like, I'm looking at work and an obsession with getting things done and an inability to get things done and always wanting to start new things and, whew, yeah.
Yeah, a lot. Well, it's a good thing that we have our next focus is what do you suffer over in practice?
Interesting leading into that. And I don't know if I've had, I mean, I'm sure that I have, but the way that the self-hate is using the Enneagram information to just emphasize mm-hmm. everything that's wrong with me, as opposed to being able to say, isn't that good to see that that's how uh-huh. you're operating?
Well, let me, I have two clarifying questions, Kate. So the first one, all of the voices are going for you, right? Does that mean you don't do what it is that are the next steps in what you've got to do? So this dog has been in the works, and now you get the dog. Your PhD program is in the works, and I'm assuming that there are various milestones that you have to meet, and over the course of the year, you've been meeting those milestones. Would that be accurate to say?
Well, it is this. This is the big milestone. So all of the work throughout the year is, I haven't had to produce anything to really uh-huh. concrete. So it's coming uh-huh. up in a couple months, and my first draft was due, and I haven't uh-huh. turned it in yet, and I'm needing to turn it in of this particular piece of it. And what I would love to be able to step into is appreciation and joy for the work that I'm passionate about. And the only way I feel like I can get things done is to just be a victim, be frustrated, be filled with voices of self-hate and, like, push through that really tough place to just get through it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, So if I hear what you're saying, there's at this point, what the voices have gotten you to is a place of paralysis. You can
yes.
see the process by which the paralysis happens, but what you're also noticing as the other side of the duality I project is that even if you push through the self-hate piece and get stuff done, then what you're going to be told to feel bad about is the fact that you did it in a way that was self-hating rather than joyful.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yeah.
true?
Yeah.
yeah.
And what
yeah.
drops in as you say that is how whenever I've had like a major accomplishment in the past, the process of immediately discounting it as soon as it's done.
Yeah. Well, and we can see so we can see so much in it. And I guess part of what you're pointing at is the way you're made to feel bad is that seeing is not enough. If it doesn't alter your experience, then it's not something that is materially different.
Exactly. You just put it, that's exactly how the voices, yeah, great,
right.
good thing you saw that. Now get it done.
Yeah.
Like, now.
Yes. Yes, and that is really what we start to lose interest in. Because what we're doing is an awareness practice, and what better way for the voices to take the upper hand in that as to dismiss the practice of paying attention as the important piece of it and redirecting the attention on it's only what you get accomplished that counts. Seeing doesn't count. And so if you're seeing it, what difference does it make? Is the best way for it to continue to perpetuate devaluing your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we buy into it so deeply, right? We're so deeply conditioned to my well-being or at some level is based on what I produce. If I'm not producing, first of all, there's something wrong with me. If I'm not producing cheerfully and gratefully and happily and passionately and with all of these conditions being met, what's wrong with me? And if I'm the kind of person who's excited by many options in life and start to pursue all of those options, there's something wrong with me because I can only do one thing at a time because otherwise whatever's wrong with me is wrong with me, right? And mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. here you are pursuing a process of transformation, which is based not on fixing you or fixing your circumstances or fixing whatever is wrong with you in order to produce the outcome, but is looking from the perspective of challenging the very belief that underlies the structure that basically says only if you do X, Y, and Z in this way, in this manner, is that does your life count in any way? And you're challenging that very notion by going, yeah, I see what you do. I see what you're saying. I don't believe you. Mm. That to really mm-hmm. rest in nothing has to change. I don't have to change. My circumstances don't have to change. And I don't have to produce necessarily for me to do what I'm committed to doing, which is waking up and end suffering.
Mm.
And that's how it gets us, right? It puts things together which are not related. My puppy and my experience with my puppy somehow gets put together with my PhD program deadline, which then gets put together with I'm not happy if I turn it in, and I turn it in by having pushed through it. Like suddenly the narrative includes all of these threads which are not related at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also that voice, you know, so I have lots of recordings around, like, you know, you're not the, your value isn't based on what you produce, like, your authentic nature isn't defined by, like, the quality of this, of work product. And then the ego voice is, oh, then just don't do it. Right? Like, you don't have to do it. That will prove that that's how you're going to really prove that it doesn't matter.
Right. Which we respond, not buying that one either. Because in the world of ego, maybe that's another reassurance there, right? In the world of ego, if you care, then you do something. If you don't care, you don't do something. And in the world of awareness practice, I just do everything and witness what happens. Mm-hmm. If I do something, I watch what happens. If I don't do something, I watch what happens. And what I do is completely divorced from how I feel. I mean, that's what we train with all the time. Mm. I don't care how I feel. I have no interest in my feelings because feelings are just another dimension of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. They control. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it. I won't do it. Oh, I just did it, and I don't feel the fulfillment and the high and the ecstasy and the bliss of having done it, so it must be not worth it to me, right? Feelings are just such a lousy indicator of an experience. Looking at the wrong place.
Yeah, it's so good to hear. Like I'm having like an emotional reaction just hearing the freedom that's offered in that. Like, who cares if it feels hard or if it feels like you can't? Like, just do it. Like, those feelings aren't dictating your actions. They don't have to be dictating what you actually do.
Right. And that's why we practice on so many levels, right, Kate? You have the ability to watch what the voices are doing. You have the ability to be with the person who is subject to those voices. Because if she is trying really hard and she's freaked out because she can't get this thing done, you can be with her and comfort her and encourage her and appreciate her efforts. And that's what she needs. And then you can draw on whatever centered student or competent person who's there, who really enjoys this work and can do it, and have them do it, right? You can have all the components of the experience.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the practitioner who watches it all.
Mm-hmm.
As home workshop, right? That's what she does. She has a grand old time paying attention to all of the ways in which egocentric karmic conditioning is trying to mess up this human's life.
Yeah.
Very separate from the person who's with Kate saying, okay, Kate, let's do this together, who's very, very different from the person who can do it and will just do it however she needs to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah, it's just, yeah, good to hear all those different things are happening. And I can see and resonate with each one of those personalities or people or whatever it is that are that are existing in this space.
That's exactly right. And so it seems like one central belief that however you do the recording around is it's that belief that undervalues the process you're in rather than the focus on the content, right?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's focusing on, if you didn't, you're in this PhD program, deadline is this, it's due. Just because you're seeing your process is not helpful to get you to the finish line. However, we want to work on having the attention be on what it is your process. Your process here is a practice of awareness that you're bringing your life into.
Mm-hmm.
That automatically shifts the attention too. And now there's that other dimension with which you're practicing with the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, that other piece, okay, that just dropped in. It tells you that if you push through it, unless you push through it in a self-hating way, you're not going to get to the finish line. But if you bring compassion into this entire process around the paralysis, around the delay, around even possibly accepting Kate unconditionally because she, for some reason, didn't make the deliverable, you've actually done the thing that we set out to do in practice. You did it compassionately. Compassion, being with presence, was your experience through the whole process. That's a victory for the human being and a defeat for egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate.
Yes, yes. Just being present. And again, I feel like kind of what's coming through is that I can be present and frustrated by the voices of self-hate at the same time. And I can be compassionate and struggling at the same time. Like, those don't have to be mutually, it doesn't have to be that, like, I'm so present, meaning I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be doing this work, and I feel so open and like, all of those, like, that's also part of that ego story. Like, all of, I can give that compassion and presence even when it feels, when these other personalities are also showing up.
Yes, because you're aware of them, and awareness requires presence. In other words, it's the belief that we're challenging, right? It doesn't have to feel anyway. Presence doesn't feel high, blissful perfection all the time.
Right, totally. And that doesn't, I also, they can be, in presence, they're present, the different personalities, and I can disidentify, which is what allows me to move through all of that content that's happening and churning in the process.
Exactly. You could be present to every single bit of it. In other words, your attention is on awareness, which is the only way you can be present to all of it, which is what you're practicing, which I would say is a practice victory.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you so much. I'm going to definitely listen to this again. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Kate.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Kate. I enjoyed that conversation, Ashwini, and I appreciated how you brought out the condition standards around my producing for work. You know that I have to be always willing and always cheerful and always passionate. And it's just a standard set up designed to keep me in suffering. And to see that, as you were talking at the end there with Kate, to bring compassion to the whole process, to all of it. And the presence is just invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely invaluable.
Great. And Ashwini, we're going to break here and hear from our recording listening program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Anna from Seattle.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hi. Hi. So good. Yeah, I'm kind of dating right now, somebody, and so ego gets me, with all the stuff that happens, you know, when I'm in a relationship with a man, or maybe in general. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the same process regardless of what you're doing, right, Anna?
Yeah. So I really want to get that rid of that before I get into a relationship.
So what are you seeing? What is the process?
First, the content. So it's really, really nasty. Ego is, of course, so nasty. It tells me that, and I see it, literally with my eyes, too, or I really, think it's real, that, for example, a girlfriend of mine, a friend of mine, or any other woman is such a better match for him than I am. So that's what ego tells me. And then I really perceive it that way, you know, that completely they are the perfect match. And then I don't want my friend to meet him and stuff like that, for example. That's where ego wants to go, you know.
Right, and do you feel like you are very clear that comparison is what's operating, and the comparison is going to isolate you with it, and cause you to do things that you don't actually want to do? You want him to meet your family and your friends and things like that, right? So it sounds like you're very clear that that's ego. And so then the question is, if you're clear about it, what do you do, right?
Exactly.
What do you do? How do you practice with it?
It seems like there is a bypassing, because I can get to the point where, you know, recording and listening, where I say or the mentor says, if worst thing happens, I'll be fine, you know? And then I really do feel fine. But it feels like I bypassed something, or I don't know.
You what something? I'm sorry, I missed that word.
I feel like I bypassed fragment in there, you know, just jumping to, if the worst thing happens, I'll be fine. It doesn't really help me feel better in between.
Yes, no, I couldn't agree with you more. But let me see if I can track your process a little bit. So you hear the voice of comparison, you believe it, you pick up the recorder and you talk to, you talk about, you, I'm projecting you do a two-handed recording or you talk to the mentor, and the mentor says, it's going to be all right, even if that happens. And so are you saying that when you hear that, you feel okay, but somehow or the other, after you do the recording, there's still some gap in which you feel you're believing conversation because the conversation comes back?
Yeah, they're still in a painful place of experiencing what ego does to me.
So two things drop in, Anna, to try out, right? One is to do that two-handed recording exercise with what if that person... So the mentor said, you know, even if the worst happens, you're going to be fine. That's true. At one level, that's addressing something that's going on for Anna in this process, right? But to hear that message of, because what the mentor didn't say is, I love you just the way you are. There's, I mean, if I was dating you, I would choose you all the time. In every moment, right? And I'm just projecting here. So there's something going on for Anna that's very painful when she hears that somebody, that she's not as good as someone else. And so it might be interesting to see why that message lands for her and what is going on there for her to explore that, for you to facilitate why it's so believable for her when the voices say that. Not that she'll be fine in the end, because I think your intuition is right. There is a bypass there. There's an aspect of this process that hasn't been explored, and it would be interesting to explore it. What? Not that you'll be all right, because you will be. That the practitioner knows that. But for the person who's listening to that ego voice that says, you're not the perfect match, that person is really the perfect match, When she hears it, what does she feel? What is she afraid of? What is the message she gets that it gets reinforced that causes her so much pain? And then, what would compassion say to that?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'll look at that. Yes.
Yeah. So that's one piece of it. And then the other piece of it is I'm not quite clear exactly what the in-between is between the recording and when you don't feel better. But if what happens is that and we've been talking about this in the radio show, is jumping from one sticky in the process map to the other, right? So you have one sticky, which is the voice that says, oh, well, you know, your friend XYZ is a better match for him. You're not good enough. So at that point, you've basically come back to the moment. You've gotten off the process map by doing that recording and listening practice that allows you to feel better. And then you feel worse again. Now, is that the same sticky, you know, the comparison sticky, or there's something else the voice is saying at that point that you want to pay attention to so you can work out how you recognize that and get back here, get off the process map. So there are two things you could practice with and look at.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Well, let us know. Yeah. I can't wait to hear.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, comparison is so bad. Bad.
Well, it's so bad, right, Anna, in that way that it doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
You don't see a rose bush looking at a daffodil and going, oh, my God, I wish I didn't have thorns.
Yeah, and that's the other tricky place, because ego wants to have, you know, that one other person, which also is an illusion.
You mean, that you want the ego wants another a person, meaning like your like a boyfriend?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I would say, I would repeat what Sherry says. Ego doesn't give a flying fig about anything so long as it has your attention, right? So the illusion, it's true, it's an illusion because it thinks that it can make you believe that it wants this other person. Well, actually, no, it wants anything that it can torture you with because as soon as you decide to have this other person, it's going to tell you, you know what, Anna? That friend of yours would be so much of a better match, and it'll have you in a suffering place. It really wants your attention so it can make you suffer, right? Because there's a way in which you are, as you said, as the mentor said, you're completely fine. You have the mentor with whom you have a relationship that is completely whole and completely fulfilling. If that is the place of your well-being, then sure, we can relate to other people because not because we need it, but because we choose to. We don't need it. We don't want it. It's just simply, I have that option which I'm exercising, but not because I need someone else.
It really feels like I do, though. I can't really make myself feel the way that he did, kind of. So I don't really know.
Which is a whole different ballgame of things for you to pay attention to, right? Are you listening to a voice that says you don't feel that same way? Maybe you do feel that way when you're in a relationship with the mentor, but you're not allowed to say that the same experience is true in this other place. What an interesting exploration. Because who says you don't feel that, you can't make yourself feel that way that he makes you feel? And of course, if you know about projection, right, Anna? You're projecting everything. Or he goes projecting on you.
I'm making him up. Yay, that's great.
Yeah, either you're making him up or ego is. And it would be good to find out which one that is, right?
No, I think it's love. No, really.
All right.
That's true.
Yes. Because that is inside you. That experience is being generated from your heart. It's yours. It's got nothing to do with him.
Yeah. Okay, I'll try to understand that. Yeah.
Well, there's lots to practice with, so just choose one of the things we talked about and let us know, okay?
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks, Anna.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. That was a very rich conversation, Ashwini. And,
oh, it is.
Yes, a rich, very discussion. And I appreciated your comments about ego always being unhappy, no matter how the circumstances unfold. And I'm just being, as Sherry likes to say, I'm just being played like a violin by ego, being dragged around from one desire to the next.
Right. And dissatisfaction, that's what it is, right? I mean, ego is dissatisfaction.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And we have time for at least one more caller here.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, just a sec. That caller just disappeared on me. Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. This is Joyce in California.
Hey.
Hi, Joyce.
I am in a place where there's some noise, so I'm going to shut a couple of doors. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
All right. Well, this has been such a rich amount of information that it kind of pulled me out of ego's clutches. And so much is going on in my life right now that ego has just, I feel like I'm in a hornet's nest. You know, ego is just coming at me from every direction. And I've been pretty much in its clutches. So hearing everything that's been going on is such a breath of fresh air that I have to.
Dare I say you've disidentified, Joyce?
I think you could dare to say that, yes.
Oh, fantastic. Let's celebrate that.
Yes. Yeah. There's so much going on with my health, and now we just have another, it's not a fire alert, but it's an alert that there are going to be heavy winds, and so we need to be prepared to have the electricity go off again. And it seems like everything in my life has was just right there, and ego was, I can't even describe it now.
Well, that's good.
Yes, because I'm not in it. So,
yes. And, you know, Joyce, I don't know if this is your experience, but I'm just going to offer it to you, is that what we do is we feel identified. We then put ourselves in this practice environment, and our attention moves to awareness. Right? We can't help it, because that is what the process of practice is. And so then we disidentify, and we're here, and what the conditioned system wants us to do is to go back to our identified place and talk about it.
Oh, yes.
Right? And so you could just go, I'm disidentified. You know what? I'm here, and I'm breathing, and I feel great, and I don't have any voices, so let's talk about gratitude instead.
Oh, gosh, that's so simple, so clear.
Exactly. And so you just, because what we're practicing, yes, it's important to watch what the voices do, because that's how we build awareness about where we are. But if you're aware that you're not identified anymore, you want to train yourself to be in awareness and speak from awareness rather than speak about conditioned mind. Why waste time?
Yes. Be in awareness. Can you say that again? Be in awareness.
And speak from awareness.
And speak from awareness. Yes. Okay.
Right? If I consult my experience right now, I don't have any voices going. I'm feeling really grateful, and I want to celebrate that. And I want to stay here, and I want to talk about what here feels like.
Right. Wow, from the place I'm sitting now, that's just, it's so simple. And from where I was in the hornet's nest, it's like, I couldn't even see that.
That's true. And once again, I think we're practicing on this call, right? So what you just did was comparison, which is an ego process. It's leaving here to reference what was in order to talk about what was. You don't even have to do that. Right? That's the training. I'm having a good time talking to you, Ashwini. I'm even laughing about it. That's the process we're in. This process of delight.
Right. Leaving here to talk about what was, which takes me right back to what was.
That's exactly right. My attention has just shifted into that negative world, and the more I talk about it, the more into it I'm going to get, because that's what happens.
So what that just the awareness that hit me was that we start out with a bigger circle. It doesn't seem, you know, like right now where I am, it seems that won't happen again. But then conditioning starts doing what it does, and then keeping at it, it's like sucking the life out.
Right.
Just talking about exactly. It is doing it.
That's exactly right. So you are in the wider circle. How to narrow the wider circle? Bring the attention to conditioned mind, because it's a narrow circle anyway, right? So here I am in the wide circle. And so when I'm in the wide circle, what I want to practice is making the circle wider. The way to do that is to look to life, not to conditioned mind. Because any attempt to look at the past or the future is leaving the present. From the present, it's possible to widen that circle to encompass all that is.
Can you say more about that?
Well, if I look to negativity, then the circle narrows. If I reference conditioned mind, the circle narrows. So here I am in the expansive circle, and suddenly I'm here, and where the attention wants to go is, you know, when conditioning does that thing where, and we're right back with the attention on conditioning, talking about how the attention on conditioning narrows the circle. And so we train ourselves to catch that and go, nope, feeling expansive. And so what I want to talk about is how I'm going to expand my circle of awareness, not how I have known conditioning to narrow my circle of awareness when I have a very expanded awareness. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, that was a double knot there that I'm not sure I totally saw. But and I see that the awareness is the awareness of this here now. So it's ever so gently just showing me this here now instead of letting, you know, like a buzzing mosquito draws the attention.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Even in the, and although we don't want to talk about hornet's nests and narrow our aperture of awareness in any way, it's available even when the hornet's nest is our experience. Because we start to look for, I feel the weight of the conditioning. If I feel the weight of the conditioning, I'm aware of the weight of the conditioning. And so I am in awareness. And now I build my ladder of expanding that circle of awareness from the narrow perspective of conditioned mind to a much larger perspective of awareness. So when attention is on conditioning, awareness is collapsed. So when that happens to me, I want to redirect the attention back to awareness so that the awareness expands. And then I'm in the process of expanding awareness, rather than increasing identification.
Wow. Boy, I there in my future, I see that I will be listening to this a lot.
Uh-huh.
And
wonderful.
And I that's just, it's, I can't even describe it. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you,
Joyce. That was
very
fun.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Joyce. And I know that place also, Ashwini. It's so great, and I can't even find the words to put to it. It's lovely.
Yeah, now we just resort to twinkling.
Twinkling. Yes, exactly. So thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, all of our callers and listeners. And it's been a great show. And go happy, and don't forget to treasure yourself.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for always being there.
My pleasure. Good night.
Take care. Go happy.
Okay, go happy.